Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting remotely from my home studio. Coming up later in the program, how Central Pennsylvania's largest grocery chain is keeping their shelves stocked while hiring more workers. But up front, when the coronavirus began to spread in the U.S., there was a run by consumers on toilet paper and cleaning supplies. Shelves were often empty, and when a store did have those items in stock, sales were limited. However, food at grocery stores wasn't a concern. Almost 2 months later, the word is there is enough food, except for certain items that haven't made it to the store. Some meat products, for example, as workers at meat processing plants who often work in close proximity to one another have been hit hard by the virus. Meanwhile, some farmers have had to dump their products. Some have even euthanized animals. We're going to be talking about the food supply today with our guest, Pennsylvania Food Merchants Association President and CEO Alex Belonga. Mr. Belonga, welcome to the program. Also joining us today is Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture spokeswoman Shannon Powers. Shannon Powers, good to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Scott. It's great to join you.
So, Alex Belonga, let me start with you. The chairman of Tyson Foods says the food supply chain is broken. I mean, he made a definitive statement. We've seen headlines over the past week that have said something similar. But yet we hear there is plenty of food. What does that mean for grocery stores and consumers in practical terms?
I think what it means is what the folks on the ground have been saying, and our membership is comprised of those retailers, grocery and convenience store operators, as well as wholesale operators and some of the consumer packaged goods companies, so folks up and down the food supply chain. They've been saying that the food is going to continue to arrive at the stores. The shelves will continue to be stocked, but there may be some disruption in the type and variety of products. So I think it's from a practical impact on the customer is going to be maybe the variety of products, maybe the different types or the quantities, and possibly the price as a result of the limited supply or a limiting of supply. I think that's what you're going to see on a ground level.
So that ground level, you mentioned price. Can we expect prices to rise anytime soon?
It remains to be seen what kind of prices or price rising we'll see and what level. But I think there will be some increase if there's got to be substitutions or there needs to be changes in the offerings or their supply is strained. That's just the natural supply and demand playing out. But we don't know at what level yet. It remains to be seen. The president, as you mentioned, I think earlier, signed an order to keep the plants open. So there may be less disruption than was initially predicted. So it's hard to say at this point.
Let me take a step back. You said certain types of foods that, and maybe certain brands that may be in shorter supply. Which ones were we talking about? I mean, you were referring, and the president made that order for meat processing plants, but it's not all meats. So what are we talking about?
Well, poultry, pork, those items have been impacted by these closures. So you may see some different varieties or substitutions there, different types of products that maybe, you haven't seen before or just less variety. A lot of times that's what ends up happening is there's product that flows, but there's just not as much of it, not the same number of pork options or poultry options, or in the case of in other items where you talk about eggs or paper products. So it could be that you're just seeing a smaller supply, if you will, or smaller variety of supply, as opposed to the supply goes away entirely, which isn't the case.
When you talk about price, who actually sets the price?
So the price is set at different levels. The price starts, obviously, is set initially by the manufacturer or the consumer packaged goods company, and then goes to the wholesale level where there's additional pricing added for that level, and then at the retail level. So it's multiple layers of pricing that occurs. And a lot of times, especially when you get down to the store level, there's not much that can be done from that perspective. You're getting your product from somewhere else, from someone else who has set the price based on the availability of the product, the supply and demand, and the strain on the supply chain at this point, and you might not have much say once it gets to that level, based on your own costs and your own operation. So it's a multi-layered system that determines the ultimate price.
You know, and I'm going to turn to Shannon Powers in just a moment and talk about the plight of the farmers. But following up on that, when you say that there are certain types, and you mentioned chicken, you mentioned pork in particular, but can we break it down even further? Are there even, you know, like chicken breast or chicken leg, chicken wings, you know, pork loin, that kind of thing, that are in shorter supply than what we would usually see in the grocery store?
I haven't seen that specific down to that level of information, but you know, my understanding is that these plants are so large and so substantial in their reach that it's, you know, 5% of the entire supply in some cases of these items. So it stands to reason that it would be, you know, all the items that are involved. But I haven't seen it drilled down to that level at this point.
Let me tell our listeners at home that if you would like to participate in our conversation, you can do that by dialing 1-800-729-7532 on your telephone. You can send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Facebook, you can leave a question or a comment. That's WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Shannon Powers is a spokeswoman for the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. Shannon, we're hearing about some farmers that are struggling to get their products to market during this pandemic. How would you describe that right now amongst Pennsylvania farmers?
Scott, that really depends on the individual farmer and who their contracts are with and what they produce. So it varies widely across the state. You know, you've pointed out some of the pain points, beef producers, for example, and poultry producers. If those poultry producers are supplying a large company, which many of them are, they have not had, so their demand has decreased drastically. And they have, in some instances, as you mentioned, made the difficult choice to have to euthanize their chickens in particular. And that's partially because of the size of the chickens. There's no room to house them, and chickens reproduce quickly. So
yeah,
there's nowhere to put them. So that's a difficult choice on their part. They have nowhere to put them. And no, you know, you can't keep chickens indefinitely until you have a market to sell them in. And the market, the radical change to the market, you know, as you can imagine, without sports going on, you haven't had the tremendous volume of chicken wing sales. So that's where the supply chain has had some major kinks, and in some instances is indeed broken.
You mentioned chickens having to be euthanized, and I've seen nationally, not just in Pennsylvania, but nationally, some pork producers who say that their pigs, their hogs, may have to be euthanized. And well, there's a story today that said that there was a Pennsylvania farmer that had to euthanize 200,000 chickens. I mean, is this unprecedented? I don't remember. I mean, other than like some of the diseases that went through, chicken farms. We've had a couple now, several times since the 1980s. Other than that, where chickens had to be destroyed, is this unprecedented?
It, very much so. There's no disease causing this, no animal disease. And so the department is not driving the decision for people to euthanize their chickens. That's a decision that has to be made at the farm level because they have no market for those chickens. Demand has, you know, dropped off a cliff in some instances.
Also,
as far as pork producers, though, we haven't seen that yet in Pennsylvania. Pork and beef producers don't have, certainly beef producers don't have the same challenges with space. You know, they can, and they don't reproduce as fast. So that the problem is not as great on the beef for beef producers. However, they, you know, they need a market for their beef.
Let's talk about dairy for just a moment. We've seen video, which I have to say that has shocked many people, of dairy farmers that have had to just dump their milk, just get rid of it because they couldn't get it to market. And, of course, milk, dairy, many dairy products, you have the a shelf life for it that it can't survive that long or it spoils. How often is that occurring here in Pennsylvania?
Again, that varies depending on who each individual farmer's contracts are with. There are farmers who absolutely have not had to dump milk. If they have a local outlet for their milk, for example, if they have an on-farm store or if they're supplying a buyer who's close by, we have had a imbalance in supply and demand in dairy for a number of years. And so the dairy is already under tremendous stress. The farmers have been incredibly effective in producing volumes of milk. But the market for fluid milk, just milk in a jug, that has changed. And this has exacerbated that system, that situation for many, many farmers.
Now, you know, we're talking about several different aspects of food supply, but restaurants being closed in particular, I think there's, you know, I think that I've seen that profits for restaurants are down like 95%, something like that. And from what I understand, when it comes to dairy, that restaurants are like 50% of the dairy customers for out there. That has had to have had a major, major impact on what farmers are going through here in Pennsylvania.
Certainly it has. Some of the things that we've been doing that have been interesting is we advocated for more flexibility with, as you can imagine, the packaging for if you're supplying restaurants or if you're supplying schools or hospitals or hotels, packaging is different. And those packaging requirements are different. We advocated to the FDA to give some flexibility there. And so now you're seeing in grocery stores, you're seeing some of this commercial size packaging available to consumers, like a giant tub of cereal or a huge bag of soup, for example. That's some of what we've been able to do as state government in order to continue to give farmers a market and to get the food to consumers wherever they are, whether it's in a food through a food bank or grocery store or a market.
Okay, you mentioned a food bank. One of the questions that I'm sure many people have is this excess of chicken, this excess of dairy products, why not send it to food banks or places that are taking care of or, you know, handling so many people who are food insecure today?
That's a great question, Scott. The root of the problem is packaging. And so if you're eating something in your home, you're not looking for bulk packaging, typically. That processing that still has to happen in order to get the food in the packaging that's accessible to consumers and accessible through the food banks, that processing costs, and the farmers can't be expected to bear all the cost of just donating their product. They just don't have that funding. And that's one of the reasons behind our PASS program, the Pennsylvania Agricultural Surplus System, which was funded under Governor Wolf, and he has requested an increase in that program, but we're trying to use some of those creative programs in order to get that food from where it is to the people who need it. The problem is a lot of times the transport packaging, the processing needs to happen and needs to be funded somewhere. And we've had a lot of, a lot of Alex Belogas members, for example, who have been incredibly generous in coming up with their own funding to fund the processing and some really creative partnerships to get that food to the food banks and to the food pantries is where it's distributed in the consumer size packaging.
We're going to talk more about that in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about the food supply at grocery stores and Pennsylvania farmers, some of the challenges that they're facing during the pandemic. Our guest today is Pennsylvania Food Merchants Association President and CEO Alex Belogas, along with Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture spokesperson Shannon Powers. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. And we're going to take some phone calls in just a moment. But, Alex, before we go any further, something that I mentioned right up front in the introduction is that when the pandemic first started, that there was this run on toilet paper and, to a lesser degree, cleaning supplies, that so many people were hoarding them. From what I understand, that is a real concern now with some of these meat products and maybe some other of the products that are in shorter supply, that people will hear a program like this and it will be kind of a vicious cycle that people will go out and hoard those items. Are there any plans to keep that from happening?
Yes, that is an issue and certainly something that's, I think, just a natural reaction, when folks hear potentially concerning news. But it does cause people to run out and panic buy and hoard. That's subsided a little bit on the paper product side. But in addition, retailers have been putting some limits on products, the quantities and the different types of products in order to try and head that off before it becomes a bigger problem. So I think, and I have heard some folks started to do that with some meat products. I don't know how widespread it is at this point, but I would imagine that's something that is going to be coming to the forefront here as this progresses.
I understand we have Joe Arthur, who is the head of the Central Pennsylvania Food Bank, on the line right now. Joe, how are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing well, Scott.
Okay. So you wanted to call in to talk about the guests that we have on the program and the organizations that they represent?
Yeah, I actually wanted to give a big thank you to Alex and to Nick and to Shannon, all three of the organizations there, the Giant Company and PFMA and our State Department of Agriculture, have been amazing partners with us for a long time. And in the crisis, they've really gone above and beyond to ensure that our food supply for people in need remains robust, which it does. We see downstream some of the challenges that they've been describing, but I will tell you that each of their organizations have been amazingly innovative, and that really the whole U.S. food supply system is very adaptable. So I wanted people out there to know that Central Pennsylvania Food Bank and our partners, even though our volume is 50% higher than normal, we do have enough food from day to day because of the efforts of folks like those on the show today.
Joe, I'm curious, though. You say you do have enough food. Are there specific items that may be in short supply compared to others?
What we saw early in the crisis back in March and early April was a difficulty getting kind of the shelf-stable food we put in crisis response boxes. So think peanut butter and soups and stews and tuna fish and things like that. Through the help of the folks on the phone and others, we have been recently able to receive more of that. And we have all we need of fresh produce and dairy and that sort of thing. So from our perspective, the food system producers are adapting day to day, and so we're able to adapt with them day to day.
Hey, Joe, thank you very much for calling in and all the work that the Central Pennsylvania Food Bank is doing during this difficult time.
And thanks for having me on. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Alex and Shannon, that has to be good news to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead, Shannon.
I was going to say, you know, Joe hit the nail on the head. These partnerships that have existed and have been incredibly strengthened over the past few years, they're really being tested now, but it's been all about the planning and the investments that we've made in just this sort of, looking at infrastructure issues, where we're strong, where we need to invest, if we've done that kind of planning, it's showing now where our strengths are showing now, and that's been incredible. Secretary Redding has spent so much time on the phone with farmers as well as industry partners. And he said yesterday, the crisis has revealed the character, not just the farmers, but of every step in the food supply chain. The character is there, and the resilience, and we will continue to feed people, and we will continue to feed them safely, and to make the food supply accessible where it's needed.
I have a question from a listener who says, my youngest son is a quality assurance inspector at a meat processing plant owned by a Canadian firm. There are at least 30 active cases at this location, despite their taking appropriate actions to protect workers. What is the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture doing to make sure that, and he's talking specifically about a meat processing plant, but what is the Agriculture Department doing to make sure that these plants are safe for workers?
So the USDA actually inspects and oversees the food manufacture, the plants, meat processing, poultry processing. The State Department of Agriculture, that's not a normal part of our jurisdiction. However, we've adopted kind of a more aggressive guidance as far as talking with the industry about what they can do, and we have been invited in to many of the plants to consult and tell them, given how the specifics of your operation, because it's never one size fits all, here's what you can do to limit person-to-person transmission of the virus, to prevent it, and to make your operation safer. But that's on a consulting basis, and that is an extraordinary situation that's happening right now.
Alex, you mentioned President Trump making an executive order to keep meat processing plants open. There has been some opposition to that for just the reason that this listener brought up, the safety of the workers, because there have been so many of these meat processing plants, more than a dozen, that have been shut down across the country, including four here in Pennsylvania. I mean, do food merchants, do you wrestle with that decision of worker safety, the product coming out of these meat processing plants, making sure it's safe? How do you ensure that that happens?
Well, that's something that our folks are really thinking about day and night, and that's a big part of the work we've done with the department, Secretary Redding, close partnership with him, with Governor Wolf, and with Dr. Levine, Secretary Levine, and her team. There's really a robust system in place, a number of protections and preventative measures that have been put in place, especially at the retail level. We don't represent on the manufacturer level those plants, so I couldn't speak to exactly what they're doing. But from our members' perspective, that's something we focus on. That's really paramount, employee safety and customer safety. And there's a whole host of things that have been done, whether it's masks, whether it's register shields, social distancing reminders, personal protective equipment, temperature taking, the list goes on and on, face masks. These things are all being done across the industry to keep people safe, limiting the number of people coming in the stores, closing every other register. These are all things that are in the guidance and the health orders. There's a whole list of items that are being done all the time across the industry to keep especially the employees safe, the team members, and the customers. So that's something that is paramount. That is priority number one for our membership.
Do you have enough equipment, when I say you, meaning the industry across Pennsylvania, in your stores? Do you have enough equipment for workers?
It is an issue. More and more is coming in. There are some challenges getting the equipment. It was certainly worse a couple weeks ago, but the supply is, I think, slowly increasing, and they're making every possible move that they can make to bring in as much equipment as can be brought in. One of the big issues is, which is nationwide, of course, is testing. The availability of testing, which is something that I think that the department and the administration, President Trump's administration, are looking at. But the more we can do that, that's another component of keeping people safe and, keeping the employees and the customers safe.
Let's take a phone call from Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, I understand, is in York County. Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. I just am calling in because I also work at a food bank. I heard Joe from Central Penn calling in. And I just wanted to talk about how we have heard a bit about the agricultural surplus, and we haven't, we've been talking about how can we get our hands on that and how can we help reduce food waste. But, we haven't heard much about it, and no one's really come to us seeking somewhere to, get rid of dairy or get rid of chicken or anything. But besides that, the community's really stepped up, and we have seen at least 500% increase in need, and we've had to change everything we do, but we're making it work. And it took a little bit of time to make it effective and efficient, but we're in a good place now.
So what are you lacking? I just wanted to clarify.
We were just wondering about, the agricultural surplus with milk and with chicken and stuff. And we've been hearing all about it, but no one's come to us saying, we need a place to get rid of this. Mm-hmm. So we were just, trying to spitball some ideas on how we can get our hands on that just to help reduce the surplus.
All right. Elizabeth, thank you very much. And again, thank you for the work that you're doing. Shannon, I know that you addressed this, but answering Elizabeth's specific question, how can individual pantries get their hands on some of the surplus?
So the individual pantry, part of the challenge first, I would say, is the storage, availability of storage at the individual pantry level. And then in food bank, there is definitely warehouse storage, but in some instances we're lacking in refrigerated storage. But the two big sort of umbrella organizations, Feeding Pennsylvania and Hunger Free Pennsylvania, we have been working with them, and we have advocated for additional federal funding. The charitable food system does rely incredibly on federal funding and on whatever we can free up on the state level, but many times that requires legislative support, and we've gotten that. The federal government just announced recently an additional pool of money that would purchase food we're advocating for from Pennsylvania farmers to get it into the food bank. So there are a number of programs right now that are working hard to get those food purchases to the food bank so that then they can get it to their member pantry. We'll be talking about that today. The governor will be talking about that today about specifically about food security and some of the work that's going on to do exactly what your caller was asking.
Okay. Alex, I think this is for you. Joshua asked, We've heard a lot about the meat supply in the last few days, but as a vegetarian, I've noticed that tofu has been out of stock at my local grocery stores. Can you shed any light on this?
I have not heard of that being a specific issue, but it could just have to do with the availability of the product across the country as being a specialty or relatively more specialized item. Certain items are just not in stock depending on, you know, the supply and demand that exists. But I haven't heard that as a specific issue, that's nationwide or statewide at this point.
Well, I know it's really kind of a difficult question to ask with one product in particular. I actually did a little surveying on my own with some Facebook friends, asking them to check out the grocery store shelves, the things that they see that are in shorter supply. Of course, the paper products and cleaning supplies still not back up to what they used to be. There were some meat items like chicken wings, hamburger patties, that kind of thing that were in low supply. But some of the others that we haven't heard much about were like frozen vegetables, for example, and that included organic frozen vegetables. Also like specialty breads. One of the big ones that kind of surprised me, but I saw some of the pictures that were shared by my friends. It almost looked like the toilet paper aisle, pasta. Pasta seems to be in real short supply. Now, I guess that would make sense because so many people, it's something that can be made quickly and a lot of people have been at home. But, there's just an example. Alex, so those are not just meat suppliers. So those wholesalers, those suppliers, what has to happen to get those products resupplied?
That is a direct result of people, as you said. You know, you can buy a bigger stock, you can house it longer, you can keep it longer. So that's a result of just hoarding and panic buying, I think, initially. And you're going to see the supply chain catch back up on those items. It's just going to take time, I think. With a lot of these items, it's just a matter of timing and getting the product back on the shelf. Some are obviously in more severe shortages than others, like hand sanitizer. But others, it's just a matter of getting them restocked. And I think that's the case or the example I would use with items like pasta or those sort of longer shelf life items.
So let's take a phone call from Lenore in Lancaster. Lenore, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
I'm calling because I'm pretty troubled by this order back into meat packing plants that are unsafe. On this station, actually, this morning, I heard on NPR that it's impossible to socially distance in a big meat packing plant. And I heard that employees are walking out right now to protest being required to come back in where there are, you know, upwards of dozens of COVID cases in a plant. And I think this pandemic is revealing ways that industrial meatpacking big business is pretty broken. It's long been clear that it's very bad for the animals. It's squeezing farmers. The meatpacking plants already had a bad record for workplace injuries for workers, and now we see that these giant plants are this hothouse for COVID-19 transmission. So here's my question. How are smaller farmers and independent meat sellers doing right now? And are there ways in which we can, going forward, transform the food supply to rely more on those smaller farmers and have a more resilient food system? Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much for your call, Lenore. Who wants to tackle that one? Maybe both of you could weigh in on that.
Actually, I think it's a great question, and it goes back to the planning and the partnership and the investing strategically that has gone on to this point. Part of our historic Pennsylvania Farm Bill that was passed last year and that Governor Wolf has proposed fully funding again this year addresses that issue and these are strange terms, but the grant program was called the Very Small Meat Processor Grant. So we funded small local custom butchers who do that very thing. They take beef from local suppliers or other kinds of meat from local suppliers, and they do custom butchering that is available locally from local growers.
Yeah, you know, Alex, I was wondering about that. That was actually a question that I was thinking of before the program is, you know, we're hearing about these meat processing plants across the country, Tyson, Smithfield, some of the others. But are there grocery stores here in Pennsylvania, you know, some of the real small ones we know, but grocery stores across Pennsylvania that are butchering their own meat, supplying their own meats?
Are to a degree, certainly folks do self-distribute and self-supply. They partner with local producers and farmers and processors, as Shannon mentioned, and that has increased substantially over the years with folks looking for more local organic items and products in the store. So that's been a focus of a lot of retail, a lot of individuals in our membership. I think that's something that's going to continue to increase. So we're seeing more of that across Pennsylvania, really across the country. They typically don't do that the entire process themselves. They still partner with the local producers and farmers and some of the individuals that you had mentioned. But that is something that's increasing. And I think that does help diversify the food chain, which is important when you have situations like this, or maybe one part of it is having more difficulty than the other. Some of it is just capacity. Some of these processors are just so large and massive that they produce so much that you wouldn't be able to fill the shelves completely with just using the kind of smaller independent operators. But as those operators come online and increase in size and variety, it becomes easier to fill the shelves with their product as well. So it's a combination of the two, but certainly important to diversify and to look for other sources where you can.
I want to thank our guest for being with us today, Pennsylvania Food Merchants Association President and CEO Alex Beloga, and the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture Spokeswoman Shannon Powers. Thank both of you for being on the program today.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk, mental health during the pandemic. Also, should Lancaster County be grouped with other southeastern Pennsylvania counties in reopening? That's coming up on tomorrow's program. Grocery stores and their workers are being hailed and recognized as frontline workers during the coronavirus pandemic. And food is in demand while so many are not eating out and are cooking at home. The Giant Company, based in Carlisle, is central Pennsylvania's largest grocery store chain. How is Giant keeping their shelves stocked and workers safe? And we have some other news to talk about with Giant as well. Joining us on the program is the president of the Giant Company, Nicholas Bertram. Mr. Bertram, welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, that point that I made in the introduction, Nick Bertram, that grocery store workers are being hailed as frontline workers, being recognized as frontline workers during this pandemic. Tell us about that. I mean, you actually, Giant, is hiring 3,000 more workers, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But finally, this recognition that those who are selling food are essential workers.
Yeah, I think it's a recognition that those of us inside of the industry have had for a long time. I mean, no company is anything without great people. And I'm fortunate to be part of a team that has a lot of those great people that are working really hard to take care of each other and take care of customers and even take care of communities. And it's been, I think, really exciting to see the recognition of those in grocery, those in the supply chain of food, those in the transportation of food, just really across the whole spectrum, up to and including, you know, the great farmers and producers right here in our Commonwealth. So it's been a It's been an exhausting several weeks, if I'm being very honest. All of us are working really hard, hence hiring more and more people to try and, you know, balance the load that's here right now. But it's also, I think, exciting to see our people really shine as the stars that they are.
You know, I'm fascinated when you say that it's been exhausting. In what way? I mean, obviously, it sounds like there's been a lot of work going on. But maybe you could talk about all the ways that things are different at Giant now than they were 2 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in our stores each week, and it doesn't look like, you know, the stores that we've had for the last several years. People are moving around in a different way now in order to have safety. There's different messages that are seen in the store and signs and heard on our in-store network. I mean, there's some of our favorite departments like, you know, our kitchens and, you know, salad bars, Mediterranean bars that are temporarily shut down right now. And, you know, it definitely feels different. And then you have a demand that I think has plateaued at this point, but it's still quite high compared to like a non-holiday or non-weather event. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of activity. And, you know, everyone is working really, really hard to make sure that we are trying to get back to, you know, minimum presentation in our stores where there's enough product. I mean, and thankfully in the U.S. food supply, there is more than enough product. It just may not be the varieties that customers have seen. And that shows up in a store like, you know, the one that I'm responsible for with, you know, several thousand different varieties up and down the aisles and then around in the fresh departments. So when you think of, you know, trying to protect our team, trying to protect customers, and then trying to respond to unprecedented demand, it's quite a bit right now.
You were talking about the demand. You think that it has peaked. During the first segment of the program, we were talking about meat processing, for example, and the plants across the country that have shut down. Are there any products at Giant that are in shorter supply or that you've had to work harder to get your hands on than you would under typical circumstances?
I mean, certainly the paper products are the most challenging to get into our stores. And, you know, those are really big aisles. And so it's quite striking when you walk past and you see that the majority of them are empty. It seems that as soon as we get a truck in and distributed, it's gone pretty quickly. So that's one that definitely comes to mind. And then I also heard you mention the pasta aisle. That's one that at first surprised me, but then it actually made quite a bit of sense. When you consider that families are gathering around the table trying to feed one another right now and, you know, bigger meals, less meals out. And so, you know, pasta and Italian dishes are obviously popular from coast to coast, but certainly it's a good thing to have. We have not yet experienced any significant issues in meat. We are starting, of course, to see increased demand there because of all of the coverage of what's happening in the meat supply side. Across the country, and it is an important conversation to have. But right now, we don't have any particular problems as of this morning right now. But when it does come up, we will, of course, probably introduce product limits just to try and make sure that there's enough.
See, that was my next question, and the question I asked Alex earlier in the program about hoarding. How do you keep people from hoarding those products that may be in shorter supply so we don't get to a situation like we did with toilet paper?
Yeah, you know, it's a challenge. I think that our company has taken a much more, I would say, proactive stance and been more communicative directly with customers than ever before. I mean, I've never actually directly communicated with customers, but during this event, these last several weeks, I felt it necessary to do that, and our team came up with a More for All social media campaign that introduced one of the great farmers, you know, Southeast PA, Joe, who was on the call earlier, and just trying to help consumers know that, you know, the food supply chain is strong. Again, you might not have the varieties, but when you take more than you need, one, it could potentially lead to waste. And that's maybe one of my greatest fears, is that all of the stock up will lead to waste. But then it also hurts those that are at the end of this food supply chain, which is where, you know, supermarkets like the one that I lead and all of those inside of Commonwealth donate excess product or donate, you know, near-coded product to the food network, to the food bank network. And, you know, Joe and, you know, Phil Bennett, like all these players, they've done an amazing job coping with that in the smaller food pantries regionally. But there's not enough in certain categories, particularly protein categories right now, to donate into that. So we just all have to be really smart and only take what we need for the time being. And then when there's a legitimate supply issue, you will see, you know, limits placed both in the aisle, but also in our online business, we put limits in place online.
You mentioned that you thought that the demand had peaked, but yet Giant has plans to hire 3,000 new workers. If it's peaked, why are you hiring these new workers? And that's a substantial number.
It is, and it's on top of hiring 4,000 over the last couple of weeks already. You know, what has not peaked is the demand online. And Giant Direct, which is our e-commerce business that is either delivery or pickup in stores, we sell out of slots as fast as we open them up. And so during this time, I think it's caused a lot of customers in our area to really, you know, take another look at online grocery. And we're seeing growth there. We never stopped. I know that a lot of people had to stop. We chose not to. And we continue to do orders and continue to do deliveries. We have 5 e-commerce facilities now that do delivery. And then about 130 stores that are doing pick-from store, so you can pick it up in your car. And that is a preferred channel right now for customers. And, you know, it's been part of our growth strategy anyway to really, you know, be one of the pioneers and be on the front foot inside of e-commerce. And so we don't want to miss this opportunity when customers really want it. So the great majority of those jobs are order selectors, our drivers. You know, we've actually purchased a number of new trucks as well. There's a lot of energy right now to make sure Giant Direct is strong.
Something I did want to touch on, you're working with Team Pennsylvania. You're contributing $250,000 to provide funds for an emergency grant program that will go to farms, processors, and other small food businesses. Tell us about that.
It's, it was an interesting idea that kind of came up whenever we were talking with, you know, small businesses in the area and just learning kind of the plight of right now and just the things that are going on. And you see what's going on nationally, you see what's going on, you know, regionally, but right here in the Commonwealth, our agriculture sector is like, you know, it's just a shining example of what makes Pennsylvania great. And there are fantastic farmers, there are fantastic food processors and local artisans that we're really proud to partner with. And we know that times are tough right now. And as we were trying to figure out, you know, how can we help them while at the same time strengthening the food supply chain locally, this idea came up through the team, and, you know, we connected with a couple of key partners at the state and then Team PA, and thus was born this grant. I'll have to correct you, though, even though what we've said is 250,000, we were overwhelmed with applicants and made a decision late last week to double that. So it's now going to be 500,000 that we award next week because there were just so many people that had needs. And I'm really, really proud to work with Team PA and you know, the Department of Economic Development to bring this to life.
Nick, one of the things that we only have about a minute and a half left in the program, I noticed that we're getting a lot of questions from listeners about the availability of disinfectant, whether your workers have access to it. And, you know, someone mentioned that some of the chemicals that go into making the disinfectant are coming from China. So that has put a strain on it. What about that?
If you look at supplies for our teammates, we have definitely ran out of like the wipes that you would typically see that we've always had in the front. So that's why we've now stationed teammates there to actually spray down the carts as soon as they come in and wipe them off with another disinfectant chemical. And then we have, of course, hand washing solutions and everything else available to all the different teammates who are out there. When you talk about what's available for sale, yeah, definitely you see that up and down the cleaning aisle. We just got a huge shipment of hand sanitizer in over the last couple of days, so that's starting to go out into the system. And I know that that's been something that customers have been looking for. And, you know, individuals like me are looking for it, too. I'm in stores all the time, and so I want to have, you know, my own stash as I'm going in just to make sure that I'm doing my part to stay safe.
So the president of the company has his own stash, too?
He doesn't have his own stash. He has a bottle that's been left over for a few days, for a few weeks, rather.
No
stash for me.
Nicholas Bertram, president of the Giant Company, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Take care.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, mental health during the pandemic, and also should Lancaster County be grouped with other southeastern Pennsylvania counties in reopening? That's on tomorrow's Smart Talk, so be sure to tune in.